throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Good night.
Good night.
I nailed it.
All right, see you later.
Thanks for listening. I hope you
liked it. Nadav, Truman Show.
I hope you like it.
I hope you liked it. This is the Early Call Time podcast. If you don't know that by now,
well, we're 60,
now you
what,
do know.
Four,
64 five, shows in, something like that.
Holy shit, that's so many.
It's way too many.
Some might say too many. Yeah,
I would wager.
Say we're about like 10 over.
That said, thanks for coming over, Matt McGregor.
Yeah. Welcome to the last episode of Early Call Time.
Apparently.
Congratulations, you're a winner.
Hey,
would you rather be on the sinking ship or the one going out? I mean, whatever. Anyway.
What?
No, I don't know.
Who's the captain and who's the violin crew?
Ooh.
I'll be the orchestra.
I'll be the violin crew.
Okay.
I know who the entertainment is.
Can I be the asshole that
the cat?
Shoves the women and children aside and jumps on the lifeboats first?
That's totally. And then you shoot yourself as the lifeboat's being lowered because you feel so. No, you wouldn't.
Wait, is that what Billy Zane did?
No. Wait, hang on. Spoiler alert. Okay.
Oh, yeah, spoiler
for people
alert.
That haven't seen the
Billy
movie.
Billy Zane is a dick in Titanic.
He's a dick in most movies.
Didn't that come out in 94?
97.
97?
He knows.
Two VHSs, I got it.
Yeah.
It's a big one.
She's made of iron, sure. I assure you, she can. And that's where the first tape ends, and then you have to put the next one in.
But we're not here to talk about the Titanic.
Yes.
Fine.
It's just
Titanic.
It's just
it's going to get to it.
There's no that.
So welcome to the Titanic podcast.
Let's talk icebergs.
Where we just talk about Titanic every episode.
The movie or the actual thing?
Just
wasn't
the movie.
A little bit
of both, you know? Like, one episode will be just about the movie, and then the other one will be about the actual, you know, travesty.
We'll appraise the White Star Line China.
It's based on a true story.
Yeah. No, actually, they made a movie first.
And then it happened.
Yeah, and then it happened. And it was like, whoa, we should stop making movies about disasters.
This is weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dante's Peak is right around the corner.
Oh, yeah.
All right,
that was McDonald's. Hey, thanks for coming over.
Yeah, so who do we have on the podcast today, Andrew?
We have my good friend Matt that I haven't seen in, like, I don't know, 40
Wow, this intro is going really well.
We were pages together.
Oh, very cool.
At the NBC.
Damn, so many pages on this show.
Do you think everyone knows what an NBC page is?
Oh, yeah.
If they haven't heard it by now.
Yeah.
But you can tell them because your experience was different than everyone else's.
Yeah, why don't you tell us?
Everyone has a different experience.
What does being a page mean?
His name is Matt? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Have we even said his name?
I said it like twice.
Really?
Yeah.
What's his last name?
McGregor.
Okay. All right. Hi, Matt McGregor.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
If that's your real name.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for bringing us a popsicle maker.
Yeah.
It's a good gift because it's useful.
It's true.
For those popsicles. Listening in the future, today it's like blazing hot outside, and
yeah,
I just any way to keep cool. You guys have air conditioning.
We do.
It's wonderful.
We do.
Central air.
Yeah.
And we just replaced the filter today for you.
Have you noticed? Does it make it colder?
I don't know. We just literally changed it.
I'm thinking of replacing my filter.
You probably should.
Yeah, I probably should.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that air conditioners have filters, so it's definitely time to change it.
You also don't have an air conditioner.
Well, the reason where we asked you to be on the show, not because you were an NBC page, but you also just recently graduated from the USC film program, correct?
Yes, I did.
Congratulations, Matt.
Thank you.
Good job.
What about the USC program was attractive to you when you decided to?
Other than the letters, USC.
Yeah.
Well, to be pretty honest, I didn't really know. I mean, I'm from the East Coast, so you're pretty much, like, everyone I knew from high school went to East Coast colleges, and you really kind of, the West Coast is like a forbidden thing that, like, no one talks about.
So
I didn't know much about USC.
It's just like shit on the West Coast? Is that what happens over there?
It's just out of sight, out of mind, I guess.
Because over here, we're like, hey, New York's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was mutual, you know? I thought it was reciprocated. I guess not.
No, apparently not.
All right, let it be known then.
Like, for instance, like, I remember getting into USC, and I told my best friend, I was like, dude, I got into USC. And he's like, UFC, dude? He's like, you're going to get your ass kicked. I'm like, no.
It's crazy that there's people on the East Coast that don't know what USC is.
Yeah.
That's like the big film school here.
Yeah. Well, it's a big college, too. I mean, just in general, they have a good
true. Yeah, people football, go there for not film.
Football program there, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. They have a lovely dentistry.
I was going to say, they have a dental school.
Yeah, we went to the Chili's recently, and the waitress said, I'm trying to get into the USC dentistry school. And we're like, that was the thing? All right, great.
She works on creating cavities there, and then, you know, it's like full circle.
Yeah.
I actually had a wisdom tooth pulled out for $40 at the School of Dentistry.
That's awesome.
I don't know a lot about that, but that sounds like a good deal to me.
Yeah. It's a really good deal. Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know what it costs.
And they knocked you out and everything.
Just local anesthetic.
Yeah, just gotta like meet him in the back of an alley, and like you gotta bring your own pliers, so like clean them.
Right. It's a school.
George Lucas walks around the corner with a drill.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh boy, we're getting way off topic.
All right, so people have heard of it.
Yeah. So the question was, how did I end up there?
University of Southern California.
Right.
So I initially didn't even want to. I mean, I went there for grad school. I didn't want to go to grad school at all. I was done with, you know, I did undergrad, and I felt like I actually went to a film school-ish kind of program for undergrad, too. And so it was never even a thought in my head to go to grad school. And then, you know, a friend of mine who I was living with, he was like, you know, we need to go back to California. You know, let's start applying to film schools or something. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, in
go
my
back
head.
To California?
Well, that's right, 'cause you left for a while.
I lived in California. What happened was, my story is like, I'm from New York. After I graduated undergrad in 2006, I moved out here just for whatever, just to find a job in the entertainment industry in some way. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting a job as an NBC page, did that for about a year, and then kind of dicked around for, can I say dicked around?
Yeah,
you can say fuck.
Oh, okay, I fucked around for 3 months or so, and then
no end bumps.
Decided to move back. So I lived in New York again for like 3 years, and then that's when my friend was like, hey, we should... You know, you want, or more or less, I wanted to go back to California. He had never been, but we wanted to just head out to the West Coast, just for obvious reasons that everything. I feel like everything happens here. And we both applied to school, and I got in to USC, and he did not.
Oh, that's awkward.
Yeah. I know, but he's making it. He's doing stuff. But yeah, so the rationalization was like, you know, it's a very expensive school, and
very
I didn't know how I was going to do that. I still don't know how I'm going to do it. But my rationalization was that they have a big network of people, and you know, it's just it's all about the connections that you make and stuff. And I'm glad I did it because I met a lot of really great people and you know, friends. Hopefully that I'll have forever.
Yeah,
that's touching.
Would you say that the networking is basically the biggest reason?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, like, I was making short films and music videos and stuff like that before I went there, and so in my head I was kind of like, why do I need to go to school for this? I know how to do it. I'm doing it now. And then so the networking was really the thing. I said, you know, I gotta meet some people that will hopefully make it before me, and then I can ride their coattails.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Sure, I get that.
So let's rewind a little bit. You were a page for a year.
Yeah.
I guess, because being a page, as we've heard numerous times, is statistically harder to become a page than to get into Harvard.
Oh, wow.
So, describe your process on how you got the gig, or was it as simple as just applying and they called you and you got it?
No, I think everyone kind of has, correct me if I'm wrong, everyone kind of has some sort of help. Just get your resume at least, like, on the top of the pile or something. Mm-hmm. So, I had a family friend who worked for NBC in New York, and she told me I should apply to the page program. I applied to the one in New York first and didn't get accepted. And then I was like, oh, there's one in Burbank, California. Where's that? You know? And so I applied, and then they called me in for an interview. I actually interviewed in like January, and they were like, oh, we'll get back to you in like 4 to 7 months or something. I was
Jesus.
Like, what?
Whoa. Yeah.
And then they called me in March and said I got the job. And I was like, I was actually on my way to some crappy job that I had just gotten. Okay, so here's the whole thing. I moved. It's actually a really funny story. Back in New York, I applied for a game show, and I got selected. It was like a little-known game show on the Game Show Network called Chain Reaction.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's like a word-matching kind of game.
All right.
But me and my two buddies got on it, and we won. And we won...
An RV?
No, we won money. I got, like, okay. We split it up. I think we That's each got $2,700.
Nice.
And so my one friend bought a car with it, or put a down payment on a car. And then it's a pretty shitty car.
Good for him, though.
My other friend, I don't know what he did with it. And then I decided I'm going to take that money and, like, move to LA and try to, like, survive. And if I run out of the money and haven't made anything of myself, then I'll move back. And so I had literally just exhausted that money, and I'd been here for like two and a half to three months with, couldn't find a job, or living on my cousin's couch. Uh-huh. And then, you know, I got some job up at Universal City Walk. Like, I don't even remember what it was, like
Bubba Gump Shrimp Company.
Something, yeah, something like that. And I was like,
I'm working in Hollywood.
I didn't have a car, and I was like walking up there, and all of a sudden my phone rang, and it was the Page program, and I just turned around. I never even went to the other job.
Somebody's even, still sitting there waiting for their shrimp. Like,
yeah. Even
where
though
is Matt?
They're still technically on the same lot, so that's kind of a bridge you could have burned. A big risk you took.
No, they weren't. They weren't on the same lot. That was City Walk's at like the Universal lot. Well, maybe now the Page Park.
It is now.
Yeah.
But back then we were on the NBC lot, which was
Burbank.
Yeah, and it had beautiful. The Tonight Show with Jay. Yeah. It had Last Call. With
oh,
Mark,
you're on
Carson
a first
Dale.
Name basis with Jay.
Jay. Oh yeah,
we're all.
Huh.
That's Leno for those of you.
Yeah, what's that short for?
Jason?
Jason.
Yeah, Jason Leno.
James.
But yeah, what other shows were on the live?
Days of Our Lives.
Yeah.
Was the Office on Hollywood
back then?
No. I mean, it was on, but it was not there.
They were in Van Nuys. I forget what else.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Ellen was there, yeah. That was interesting.
I think that was
Open House
it.
LA, right?
No. Nope, that was a Sunset Gower.
LX TV. All right.
It was later.
The News?
Yeah, the
if
News.
If you've heard of it.
KMBC
don't know if
news.
You have.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a fun lot for a while.
Yeah, so what type of responsibilities did you have as a page?
I think the biggest thing that they had us do was we were, like, basically ushers for the Tonight Show audience. We would like seat. We were audience coordinators, I guess, is the fancy way of saying usher.
Page is even fancier.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fancy way of saying intern.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it's basically that. It's a glorified internship. So you just kind of, you're the face of NBC. You have to wear the suit with the peacock tie and.
Yep.
Yeah, and you just, you know, you're working for like, what was it, like $10 an hour or something?
$10 an hour. Nice. Now they get a signing bonus.
What?
They give them like $500 when they get the job just because.
Really?
Yep.
That's neat.
I might have to write them a
signing
letter.
Bonus.
I'm going to reapply. Yeah.
So what do they do now at Universal?
We gave tours, so I imagine that they probably give the tour over there.
Well, I don't know because they have the Backlot tour,
yeah,
which is separate.
Yeah.
That's part of the theme park.
From the tram tour.
The tram tour is the Backlot tour.
Mm. Which is wonderful. If you
it
ever
is wonderful.
Have an opportunity to take it, you should.
We were working the Tonight Show one day, and because didn't your, it's your uncle, right, that worked in New York?
For SNL?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember Norm MacDonald was at the Tonight Show, and he wasn't on the show, he was in the audience,
right,
like with his mom or something.
And he lost his dad? Was that the...
I don't know, but I remember we were talking to him after the show, and you were like, my uncle does, like, props or something for SNL, and he was like, can someone take me to the bathroom? And it was just, it was the best.
The way I remember that story is that he was in the audience with his, like, teenage son and his dad. And
so,
it was the end of the show, and usually, like, if celebrities know Jay in some way, they'll, like, wait till the audience leaves to say, like, hello to him or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's what he was doing, and then someone came up to me and they were like, can you help Norm find his dad? And so I had to walk Norm around and we started talking about SNL.
What was it like talking to Norm?
Yeah, it was cool. I'm actually a big fan of Norm MacDonald. I think he's really funny. Yeah, he was, I think, my favorite Weekend Update person.
Oh, by far. He's the best Weekend Updater ever.
Yeah.
I still remember one of his jokes. I think I remember, like, the best part of his jokes is that, like, they come in three, like, the punchlines come in threes, where he was like, I don't know, he showed some pie graph of, like, you know, it says that, you know, men get 73 cents, or no, women get 73 cents on the dollar of every man, and that's okay with me, and then everyone starts booing, and he's like, calm down, a woman wrote that joke. And then everyone starts kind of laughing. He's like, I'm just kidding. We don't hire women. something to that vein. I definitely got the last two lines right. The first one's probably not. But.
Doesn't he say that the numbers on the graph don't add up to 100?
That's it. Yep. I knew I fucked up that first part. And then all of his like not like 5-minute non-jokes that are just hilarious. Oh, yeah. Just, like, no payoff.
just the dry humor of it. Like, he doesn't have inflection a lot of times with it. He's just like, it's like almost throwaway. Uh-huh. Like, whatever.
That's why I love him as an actor, too.
Yeah.
Like, just
Dirty Work was great.
I love Dirty Work.
Yeah. I heard, speaking of Dirty Work, I heard Artie Lang on a podcast. He was talking about how funny Norm is. And he was complaining to Norm about, like, some, critic called Artie Lang, like, Artie Lang has the charm of a date rapist. and he complains about it to Norm Macdonald, and Norm Macdonald is like, well, that's great, because, you know, at least you got to be charming. It could be worse. You could be a worse type of rapist. At least have some charm.
Yeah.
Did you ever...
I think I fucked that up, too.
Did you ever get to go hang out at SNL, or... Like,
yeah, actually. The thing, my uncle was like a prop manager of some kind, and he worked there all throughout my childhood, and then up until I think like 2004 or something like that. And now he works for the CBS Morning Show. Super boring. But
I don't think it's that boring. Wait, he's the prop guy for the CBS?
That'd be hilarious. Yeah. Wait, really? They have a prop guy?
I guess so. A prop manager. He, like, keeps everything.
Does he bring all the blenders for all the guest chefs?
He must, yeah.
Dope.
That's cool.
But growing up, yeah, like, I guess once I reached an age where I understood what SNL was and, like, could realize, oh, wow, I can go there and, like, hang out, I actually started doing that. The first show I ever went to was Jim Carrey and... Soundgarden was
nice.
Musical guest. Yeah, it was awesome. And my uncle used to just let me, you know, the seats in front, like right in front of the stage,
right?
Just hang out in those seats. I would go on a Saturday, so it would be like dress rehearsal. They'd be in full costume. Sets would be completed.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I was just this kid, just hanging out, like watching them.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then after 9/11 happened, the security in the building like completely changed, and they started being much more strict about kids hanging out and, like, watching the show.
All those kid bombers.
Yeah, kids are the number one terrorist threats in America, last time I checked.
Yeah. I went to a lot of shows. And in high school, I remember, like, every weekend I would go and I would take a different friend with me. And, you know...
That's awesome.
A lot of times I would take girls and be like, hey, you want to come see Will Ferrell do his thing?
What's up, lady?
So you were able to just go every...
Yeah.
Like, every week?
Every Saturday. If it was, like, a guest or, like, a celebrity I wanted to... check out. I would just hang out.
That's
and then
insane.
Like sometimes like
the Will Ferrell days?
Yeah, it was Will Ferrell. It was like from
Sherry O'Terry
1998 to like 2003 or 2004.
That's
like
crazy.
The golden era.
Yeah.
God damn.
Yep. But unfortunately, like, I was a shy kid. I never like I was always afraid to speak to anyone because, you know, my uncle would tell me, like, don't talk to the actors or, like, they'll kick you out.
Right.
So I would just sit there and, like, just watch. And, like, I can't imagine what, like, or who they thought I was.
Do they ever walk by you and they're like, don't look at me.
Don't make eye contact.
Get this fucking kid out of here.
Some people were nice. I think Molly Shannon spoke to me once.
I want to know who the actor was that was saying that.
Rob Schneider.
Whose kid is this?
Definitely Sherry O'Terry.
Just picking you up by your ankle.
Yeah.
Just cut it out.
That's awesome.
I'm trying to think of some funny stories. I mean, like, one time I took a friend and we were sitting in the audience and it was like, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock or something, and we were watching whatever band it was playing. I think actually it was the Smashing Pumpkins. And then all of a sudden, like, we were in the upper seats.
Right.
And all of a sudden, people started filing in. And we're like, oh, man, this is the dress rehearsal. Like, this is the audience coming in. They're going to make us move. And, you know, we were like, well, maybe we should just stay here and see what happens. We were in, like, the best seats possible. Like, the middle of the middle, just, like, right in the middle of everything. And, you know, they sat the whole audience, and no one ever came and told us to move. So we just sat there for the whole dress rehearsal.
These pages are idiots. They don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Like, oh, they must be important.
Right, exactly. That's probably what it was. They must be like Lorne Michaels children or something.
Yeah, like, how did they get off like getting in the seats before even people brought in? Like, they must know someone.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
I feel like the only time I ever saw that happen to the Tonight Show was when this guy came in and he looked kind of homeless. And he sat in the very front row, and then the audience starts filing in, and I turned to Scott, who's our audience like coordinator for the show, and I was like, who is that guy? Like, how did he get in here ahead of time? No, I wish. And it was, and he was like, just leave that guy alone. Like, don't go talk to him. And I'm like, is he going to shoot me? It turns out he could have, because John McCain was on the show that day, and he was... the sent. Secret Service guy in like plain clothes just looked like a total schlub sitting in the front row. Like, wow. He looked like he'd just gotten off the bus from Ohio and was like, I'm going to go see a TV taping. And he probably had like an AK-47.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Good story.
So, what kind of movies did you make at USC?
Go ahead. Did anyone try and kill John McCain that day? Did you see the guy?
Just that action? Guy. Just that guy, actually, it turned out.
All right, so what movies did you make at USC?
Like, what was the program like?
The program was really cool. I will say that, like, before going to school, I bought myself a camera, and I was like, yeah, I'll use this at film school.
What kind?
I brought a Canon 7D.
Oh, okay. Yeah, classic.
At the time, it was, like, cool because it shot – it looks like a
– it takes pictures and shoot.
Yeah, but it does video. And, of course, you get to school, and you find out, like, on the first day that you're not allowed to use your own camera. They have their own, like, proprietary.
Oh, they didn't even let you?
Nope. Yeah, I mean, for certain projects later on, you could, but that are more like you're not making films. You're making, like, director exercises or something like that, you know? But they – the USC has a deal with Sony, so we have to use all Sony cameras. Yeah.
Not a bad deal.
You think going to USC film school is just, like – they say it's the top film school in the world, that you'd be able to, like, shoot on, like – I mean, do you guys know cameras? Like, the Red camera or, like,
Some stuff.
You know some stuff.
But
no, you have to use like the Sony EX1. It was like the crappiest camera ever made.
The prosumer.
But the idea being that they don't want you to like, and they limit your budgets, like, you know, because a lot of people, not me, but a lot of people who go to USC could afford to make, you know, $1 million movies in film school. But they make you, you know, they cap your budget at like $1,000 for some of them. And,
interesting.
And they want you to all use the same camera so that the idea is like you're not flashy and you're just,
you're
focusing on the story. And,
And
that kind of thing.
That makes sense. I mean, you can tell a story with a video camera, like a not a...
An iPhone.
An iPhone camera.
Well, like the film that got me accepted into USC was, I shot it for $75. It was like, the camera I had wasn't even HD. It was like mini DV tapes. And I deliberately shot it black and white. It was like a play on Night of the Living Dead. And it's black and white. It like it looks crappy. I put like a bunch of filters on it to make it look... like old shitty film, and they loved it. You know, they accepted me to USC based
on
that.
That's awesome.
Nice.
And then I've seen people dump like, you know, I won't say names, but there are people who we go to school with who have made films for like $300,000 and stuff like that, like thesis projects. And you know, they look beautiful and stuff, but I don't know. I'm kind of retracting what I'm saying because I don't want that person to listen to this. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
don't worry, they probably
how many $1 million like, you know, big blockbuster movies do you see that are horrible?
Yeah.
The Fantastic Four movie is like being ripped apart.
Oh, that director's like,
that guy shot himself in the foot so crazy bad.
Man, I can't believe that.
Yeah. It was like within like the week of it coming out, he's like, you know, there's a fantastic version of this movie that the audience will never see.
Right.
It's like, what are you doing?
Not much anymore.
Yep. He got dropped real quick from another big project, right? Star Wars.
Star Wars, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And they're like, that he was so difficult on Fantastic Four that they just dropped him, right? Was that it?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, that sucks for him.
And I guess, like, they saw early on, you know, before the movie came out, that it was... abysmal.
Wait, so is there an opening on Star?
Yeah, there is. Actually.
Oh, I actually heard this other thing. Someone at work told me, but that the story is that the director of Fantastic Four and his wife like ran out of house while filming. I don't know if it was Fantastic Four or another movie, but apparently they brought their little dog and they did like $100,000 worth of damage to the house.
Oh, jeez.
Like something ridiculous where it was just like, just fucking trash the house.
Okay.
This could possibly be slander because I did not confirm it.
This is Fantastic Four you heard
about? I don't know if it was during Fantastic Four or just some other thing, but it was just like evidence that he is difficult to work with.
I heard something like that too. Yeah.
Right?
A friend of mine was just telling me he knows like the editor of that movie somehow, and the editor was kind of telling him, like, I was supposed to be the editor on the new Star Wars movie, and
I was attached to the director.
Yeah, he's like, I'm actually kind of glad that he got dropped because I could not work with this guy for another movie, you know, even if it was Star Wars.
Wow, he's a very positive person if he looks at it as like, nice, I get to not work with him as opposed to I don't get to work on Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy.
So what, you did like a thesis film at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you kind of do whatever you want with that one? Or
yeah, the way it works is like in your first year, you make 3 5-minute films, and they're more or less just exercise. Like I think the first one is like you can't have any dialogue. It just has to be like you tell the story visually. And then the next one after that, you can kind of do whatever you want. And then in the second semester, they pair you up randomly with two other classmates, and they could be your friends or they could be people you've never spoken to.
Yeah.
And you rotate positions on 3 different movies. So like one position, you're the writer director, and then another one, you're the cinematographer, production designer. And then the third position, you're the producer editor. And so you have to, it's more or less to see, like, it's to teach you, like, in the industry, sometimes you have to work with people that you may not know or, like, you may not even like, but you have to, like, learn to make it work. So it's a good lesson. And so for that
very
one.
Very valuable lesson.
Yeah, yeah. So for that one, I made, like, a horror. I think I sent it to you. It's, like, a Santa Claus, like, Christmas-themed horror film. Did I ever show you that?
I don't know if you did.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Sounds awesome. Yeah, I'll send it to you. It's pretty wacky. It's about mall Santa Clauses that are, they're actually aliens and they're taking over people.
Like it.
Sweet.
And then so after that you kind of have a year to take whatever classes you want, whether like a lot of people's focus is a director, you want to be a director, but then there are people who want to be editors or producers or whatever, and so there are focus classes that you can take on those particular subjects. And then in your last year you have to do like a thesis project, and you can either shoot, you know, direct a thesis film, or you can write your way out. Like you take like these two writing classes back to back, and you basically write and revise a feature script. And that's your thesis.
Oh, interesting.
And then there's another way you can do, if you want to be a producer, there's like a producing way you can do, but I don't even know what that involves.
It's like give a lot of money to someone. And be like, make this
weigh in on stuff that no one asked you about.
I think you make like a...
Can we make this better?
You make like a producing packet for a project. It could be your own project or someone else's, and you kind of like... make a pitch packet or something, you know, as if you were to go to like a studio and try to pitch
it.
No, that's actually really cool.
Yeah. But the, I directed my way out, and, the way that works is like, it's, believe it or not, it's all out of your own pocket.
Right.
So it's just, you know, I did a Kickstarter campaign. I raised $10,000, and I think the total budget for the whole movie was like between 22,000 and 25,000.
Okay.
And so the rest was like loans and just like my own money,
yeah,
which is not a lot.
So actually here's a question: how do you run a $10,000 Kickstarter? Because that just sounds like something that could be helpful to listeners.
How do you set that up? Well, right before I launched my Kickstarter, a friend of mine who's pretty having some success with this project now, she did a web series about it, like a, it's like a stop motion thing. It's called Croissant Man. I'll plug her thing.
Cool.
Nice.
And it's it's a stop motion thing about a croissant that and like all these other food characters, and they all talk and whatever.
Okay, cool.
But she did her Kickstarter. I think she raised $12,000. And the way she did it was anyone who donated, she would make like a custom. Okay, so it's called Croissant Man, and it looks like a croissant with like a French mustache and a beret. That's like what the character looks like.
Nice.
And so anyone who contributed to her Kickstarter, she would take a picture of that person and then draw a mustache and a beret on their head and then say like, thanks, you know, Andrew, you've been croissantified, and then post it on Facebook and Instagram or whatever.
Right.
And so like little by little, I start seeing all these croissantified people on my feed, and I'm like, I want to be croissantified. That's cool, you know? And then, so that was kind of it. It built like an awareness, and like, I think, you know, it made people want to contribute because they want to be part of the fun or whatever.
Okay.
So I did a similar thing. I asked her about it, and she highly advised, you know, that I do this.
Yeah.
And so my movie was like a horror thing, and I was like, what can I cleverly do to like integrate people into the theme of the movie or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And so I couldn't think of anything. So ultimately, the campaign I came up with was like, thanks for being a part of the movies, or thanks for like making a movie. And so I would take people's heads and Photoshop them onto like famous movie posters, you know, and I'd never used Photoshop before in my life, so I like taught myself how to use it.
That's good, because my next question was going to be, what if you don't know Photoshop?
Oh, yeah.
Learn Photoshop.
Basically. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
so did you have to do that 10,000 times?
Yeah, it was really, it's a full-time job. It's a full-time job. If you're going to do a Kickstarter campaign, I advise that you hire someone to, like, do it for you. Or, like, find, like, do you have, like, a younger brother or sister? That's what I did. I got my younger sister to help make Photoshop.
I am the younger brother.
Oh, no.
God damn it.
I've heard that that's kind of the way that it becomes a full-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can't keep up with it if you're doing other work.
Yeah, and if I could do it over again, I didn't realize this at the time, but you could adjust the length of it. Okay. I thought it was just 30 or 60 days. And so I did 30 days, but the way it works is like the first week or first couple of days, you know, 3 or 4 days, people really contribute. Mm-hmm. And then it sits on that number for like 25 days.
Nerve-wracking.
It's horrible. Yeah, and then the last 2 days, everyone just starts contributing because they see that, you know, that it's almost over.
Right.
Yeah. But so if I could do it again, I would have made it like 7 days.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But damn, that's impressive. 10,000 days or 10,000.
Yeah, it took a really long time.
$10,000, you got that like pretty much in the first week or?
No, it was like, you know, and like one strategy is like have some of your own money or have like, you know, I had like my parents, like they donated whatever. And that was like, I knew that they were going to donate X amount of dollars.
So that'll get you to this point at least.
Right. So, you know, and we strategically like in the middle of it, you know, put in like whatever, half of that. And I was like, whoa, it's doing well. You know, help the movie be made or whatever. And then that inspires people to do it. And then at the very end, you put the rest and it like puts it, you know, very close to the edge. And you pretty much guarantee that you're going to make it somehow.
Got it.
Right. Even if it's like your own money that gets you.
Because you're getting it back anyways.
Yeah, because if you...
But then you need to give a percent to Kickstarter?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, you do? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's very... I mean, I think it was like $500 or something after all said and done. It's like 5% or 10%.
Interesting. So did you have to Photoshop your parents' heads onto a movie poster?
I did.
And then they hung it over the fireplace?
My dad looks like the wizard from The Wizard of Oz.
Nice.
So that was very easy.
You sent him a picture of himself.
Yeah, he's like, well, there you
go.
That's amazing. And then you made a horror movie.
Yeah. So I'm kind of, the movie's done, and it's a short. It's called In the Basement, and it's like a horror thing. But I'm submitting it to Film Fest right now, and I'm kind of in that weird limbo where I'm just waiting for Film Fest. So it hasn't gotten into anything yet, but it's still early on.
Right.
I take it that you're on withoutabox.com.
Yeah, it's Without a Box, and there's a new one now called Film Freeway that's actually, I think, is better than Without a Box.
And what these are these services that you can sign up for where they'll pretty much notify you of every film festival that's taking submissions.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like a hub where you can submit to all different film festivals just on this one site as opposed to going to each individual.
Yeah, you make one submission and just you could just check box.
Yeah.
It's kind of addictive. When I was doing it for the movie that we did, it was like... It drains this one would be fun.
It drains your bank account so fast.
Yeah,
it's like $50 for this, $20 for that.
It's insane. It's really insane. My roommate actually is a filmmaker too, and he did a Kickstarter campaign just for festival submissions.
Fees.
Yeah, and he raised like I think $5,000 or something.
Oh,
dude.
Yeah, so that'll
cover him for like 10 festivals.
Yeah.
Or 100. I mean, math. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, if all they take is $50. Sometimes they take arms, sometimes they take legs.
Oh.
Yeah, those are the good ones.
Yeah. Yeah, like Tribeca.
Yeah.
So what would you like to do with your career? Would you like to be a writer-director, or would you...
Predator? A dreaditor? A pro-dreaditor?
What?
An executive pro-dreaditor?
Ooh, that sounds expensive.
He's putting titles together.
It is. It's that's like 4 day rates in one.
Imagine that on your door, though. Like, executive pro-dreaditor. Like, I don't think anyone would ever knock on your
director
door.
Director of
Crosstalk. Yeah, people would read that, and they're like, oh, they're making another one?
Right.
Yeah.
I guess
Pro-Dreditor
3 was my favorite.
Right.
Oh yeah, Pro-Dreditor versus Alien. That was a good one.
But yeah, so I mean, like, my thing has always been that I want to write and direct movies, and so that's what I want to do. And my kind of plan or my thing that I think I would be good at is, you know, I do a lot of horror films. Mm-hmm. And I think the horror industry is, like, a really good stepping stone for someone like me. Because, you know, the horror, how many horror films do you see that have, like, no stars in them and, like, mm-hmm. you don't know who the director is, but, like, you know, they cost, like, nothing. And then they make millions and zillions of dollars, like Paranormal Activity or something like that. So that's kind of my goal, is to make something like that. And, like, the first feature is, like, kind of on the horizon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
We'll see what kind of success this movie, the short that I have, gets. I think it can be adapted to a feature for sure. And, I mean, that would be something I'd want to do.
That's awesome.
What did you shoot it on?
What camera?
Yeah.
It's called the Sony F65.
Oh, it was the same?
It's the Sony's equivalent of the Red.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's, like, a really high-end.
It's. I mean, it looks
never
really good.
Never heard
so.
Of it.
Sony?
Sorry, I had to. I feel like a dick now. Sorry, the cat's biting my face.
Great.
She's a big Sony fan, so.
Yeah, she heard me talking shit, and she's like, I'm not staying.
Well, the other thing that you did for, sorry, for your Kickstarter was that you had like a, was it like a scene or something? Kind of a sample scene?
Oh, yeah, I shot test. It was like a test, proof of concept.
Right.
So I took a scene from the movie, and I just shot it for like a lower budget. But I shot it, and I didn't use the same camera that I ultimately ended up using. But yeah, and that's like pretty. It's a little different from the final scene that ended up in the movie, but it's the gist of it. And like, there's some special effects and things that we did. But yeah, so this way people were able to see like a sample of what they're contributing to and what the final product's going to look like.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was good. As opposed to just like, I'm making a movie and you just have to believe me that it'll be cool.
Right.
What was your blood budget?
Please believe me.
Please.
Because you had a lot of blood in your movie.
What was the blood budget?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
yeah, because corn syrup's expensive.
Yeah.
$9,998?
Well, I will say that we shot most of the movie on a soundstage at USC, and we knew we were going to have all this blood spraying everywhere, and so they kind of told me, you know, make sure you put, like, protect mats like down.
Dexter style,
exactly, yeah. And, you know, so we did that, but despite that, we still got blood everywhere, and there's, like, lights that hang, like, you know, from, like, a sound.
You got it on the lights?
We got it on the lights, yeah, and they actually charged me, like, extra money to, like,
that's awesome.
Cover stuff, yeah, I was like, whatever. Okay.
Well, because it was, like, it kind of shoots out, I mean, I don't want to give anything away, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a high-powered, like, high-pressurized, like,
sweet.
Tank that just shoots, like, right. We tested it with water, and, like, you know, we just blasted it on a wall, and we're like, oh, yeah, that
put
looks
a
cool.
hole through it.
Yeah. I will. I mean, this is kind of a...
Is this a horror story?
This is a horror
story. Hold on.
All right.
Hold on.
There's an intro to this.
I was getting ready for it, too.
Yeah. Talk amongst yourselves.
I'm doing the wrong one.
Oh, boy.
That is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
The f*** are you doing?
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Go ahead and intro our segment, Nadav.
Yeah, so this
wasn't
is the,
that the
this
intro?
This is the horror story segment where our guest discusses a horror story.
Like either ruining that, a soundstage.
Either that they witnessed, that they took part of course. You don't have to say any names like USC. You don't have to say what production it was, like your senior thesis project. Any of that stuff.
this is a segment that our listeners can learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah.
Right.
So lesson number one is, I guess, don't fuck up the studio.
Yeah. Don't leave dried blood all over everything. So we had this big tank that was like a homemade thing. Let me take it back. USC, the one thing that they are very adamant about is like safety, and, you know, they make you sign a million waivers and like all, you know, they're very bureaucratic in that sense that like you can't just go out and like drive in a car and throw it off a cliff or whatever, like you can't have guns. Like anytime you have a weapon in a movie, you have to use like a prop, you know, really fake looking like weapon. You have to bring it in to a guy who will like approve it. And you just have to, there's all this red tape to like do anything cool.
Okay.
and all so, right. You know, we did everything we could for this movie and got all the like safety hazard forms and like whatever signed. And I hired a guy and he was like a professional. He did special effects on like Titanic actually. And he did, I forget some, a lot of big movies, Terminator 2, I think. Nice. And you know, so my movie is in his hands. And so I trusted this guy or whatever. So he brings in this homemade, tank that shoots water out at high pressures. And like, so it's like a tank and then there's like a hose that comes out, metal hose. And then on the end of it, it looks like a shower head, uh-huh. You know? And so it shoots out like many different holes and sprays okay. everywhere.
It's like it's used to cut marble.
Don't stand in front of that.
And so we tested it out on the movie star is like this little girl. She was 13.
Oh, God.
And she was like super excited. You know, she was really into it. And the idea is that the blood hits her. So we tested it with water outside and it was really hot out like today and the water hit her and it was fine. She was like, oh, that's it. That's great. You know? And so,
like, well, this is just at 2. We're going to bring it up to 11.
He's like, the machine wasn't even on yet.
So the plan was we had 3 shots, her getting hit with blood, 2 other characters getting hit with blood. And then the final shot was going to be, just a wall getting hit with blood.
Right.
So we did her first and like it totally soaked her. I'll show you guys. I'll pull it up later.
Yeah.
We did 2 takes of it. So we did 1, but like she really anticipated the blood. And yeah. So you see her kind of flinch and she's supposed to be this like high powered, like being like that. She's just killing people with her okay. mind or whatever. And so we're like, you know, let's clean her up and we'll do another take. So we had to clean everything up. And then, so while she was in the dressing room getting cleaned up, I said to everyone on set, I was like, all right, guys, we're going to count to 3, but you're going to hit the button on 2. So in case she prepares for it, like she won't be at that point.
Nice.
So she came back and, you know, we were like 1, 2, 3, and then it hit her. And so the second take was the one we used. She didn't expect it. So then, you know, we reset it up, filled it up with blood again and shot the other 2 characters. And that was fine. So now we're setting up like this wall and we have like this big white wall that we're going to make all bloody. And we hit the button and the nozzle, the like shower head thing, flies off and goes through the wall. And the guy was like, you're so lucky that this happened on this take. Because if it hit someone in the face, it could have like killed someone probably. Or like,
sure.
I like hesitate to say this. I hope no one like listens to this. but yeah, you're someone could have knocked someone's teeth out or someone's eye out. Yeah, it was really scary.
What is the takeaway from that?
I don't know. I mean, like,
have a first AD that's just looking out for risk management opportunities, right?
Yeah.
I guess.
I guess so.
It's fucking...
And like just check the equipment every time, like after every use, especially when it's like explosive kind of stuff like that, you know.
So did it go through the wall of the set or like
it was like a fake wall, like it made out of poster board,
right?
We just made whatever. But yeah, it went right through it. I was like, holy shit.
That's awesome.
So bad.
So you were saying that you're shot on a soundstage. So did you like hire people to come in and build the sets and have like a whole set design? And
yeah, a huge like portion of the budget of the movie. The movie's called In the Basement and it's about a guy who kidnaps women. It was like kind of loosely inspired by that guy in Ohio who had those women in his house for years. Mm-hmm. So it's like a guy like that who kidnaps women, but like he has this fantasy of that he's like creating a family. So he like basically raises them in this like prison that he's created. And so we knew that we needed, you know, the majority of the shoot was going to be in this basement.
Right.
And we needed like control and we knew we were going to be spraying blood down at the end of it. And so the decision early on was to build it rather than to find an actual location. And so I had to hire a production designer to come in and,
Wow.
Or I shouldn't even say hire, actually. This is kind of horrible. But she was like a fellow student who like volunteered to do it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't actually pay her, but I paid for all
You paid for the lumber.
The lumber, yeah. Exactly. I think she got to keep all the tools and everything. She was pretty happy about that.
She came up on it.
There's at least some incentive to it instead of just like, okay, well, you're going to do all this work and you're not going to get anything from it.
Yeah.
So, except for
do I get the blood-soaked mattress?
Come on, man.
But yeah, that's I mean, cool. She built it in like a week and a half and I mean,
so did she have like a crew or did she just,
no, yeah, she had like, you know, people helping out.
That's cool.
But it was small. It was maybe like 5 people at the most.
Right.
That's
and,
awesome.
Like I remember like day one, she put up the flats and like, it looked amazing. And then I came back like a week later and it still kind of looked like that, like nothing had progressed. I was like, uh-oh. You know, she had me fooled, like, that it was going to go really fast. And then she needed another week, and, you know, it all came together, obviously. But it looks great. I mean, I think.
Yeah. I didn't know it was a stage at all when
there
I saw
you go.
It.
So. Yeah.
Is it, do you pay USC for using the stage at all, or is that
No,
just...
that's one of the perks of doing a thesis film there. There's actually, like, USC does this thing. There's two different routes you could take to do a thesis there. All the classes are numbered. So, like, there's 581 and 582. I did 581, which means, like, USC technically owns the movie.
Okay.
But you can use all their facilities for free, and you get, like, a mentor, and you get you can use the camera that they have. You can basically use all their stuff. All our post-production stuff was done there.
Do you get, like, lights and grip equipment, all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah. You get all that stuff. But if you do a 582, you own the film, but you can't use anything of USC's.
Gotcha.
And I think the only thing you get is, like, a mentor who just kind of says, like, yeah, don't spend a lot of money.
Interesting.
there's positives to both of that, but
yeah.
But I think if you want to have something that really shows your abilities, I would imagine being able to have the access to those
and you
want to
take advantage of that
yeah,
stuff
sure.
while you're
that's
there.
Why you went,
you know? Yeah, you're never
because otherwise you could have just made that movie without going to USC.
Right, exactly.
Now, if it's something that you know that you have distribution on the other end, sure, you want to take the 582, but how many film students have that option?
I think it's also, like, a lot of people who do documentaries go that way because...
Oh, that makes
sense. Yeah, because documentary, yeah. Like...
Super low budget.
Super low budget. You're just off, like, shooting whatever. You're using
those people
whatever
are weird,
camera.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't associate with those
people. But you fit that genre so well.
I wouldn't associate with me if I had a choice.
Yeah, true.
I'm kidding.
Good point.
This is the only thing I do with you, Andrew.
That's awesome.
Well, thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, man.
It's over already?
Oh, well.
Wow.
Well, no, this know. Is...
We got a big old schedule full of people today.
This was just the practice run.
If
yeah,
someone...
turn the mics on the next one.
If someone were to contact you via Twitter or Instagram, where would they go?
Yeah, are you on social media?
I am, yeah. I am on Twitter, but I don't use it. It's just kind of...
Just
existing.
There.
Yeah.
How about the Facebook?
Facebook, I'm just, I think I'm Matthew McGregor.
Yeah.
The old full name there. Yeah. And then I'm on Instagram, and I'm actually forgetting my handle. I'm going to look it up right now.
Is it Matthew McGregor?
I think it's McGspot.
It is McGspot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've had a couple of interesting, like, side projects, and,
yeah,
like, there was that. Didn't you also, like, weren't you on, like, a court TV show or something
for
a minute?
I was, yeah. I was on The People's Court.
That's amazing.
Sweet. Yeah. We had another court program person
yeah.
on our
yeah.
No, but
Monday,
you,
Danny Newman.
You were, like, on the people's court.
Oh,
yeah.
You sued someone.
I sued someone. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Or got sued. Or
I used
someone.
To be in a band when I was in high school. End of high school and then, like, a little bit into college. And, you know, we used to, like, tour a little bit. Like, you know, we would drive. This is back on the East Coast. We would drive, like, to Pennsylvania or, like, West Virginia or, like, wherever. Yeah. Just kind of, like, hey, can we play here? We played the Warped Tour once.
Wow.
Just yeah. one show. And literally, like, we showed up and we're like, can we play? And they were like, yeah, okay.
That was cool.
Yeah, so it was all right. But so, long story short, like, the guys, I used to keep my drum. I played the drums. I kept the drum kit at our guitar player's house. And there was one show, I worked during the week, and so could only do shows on the weekends. And they had, like, a Thursday night show, and they were like, hey, can you make it? And I was like, no, I can't. So they went and took my drum kit. They found a replacement. Usually the protocol was, like, they would find a replacement who would bring his own drum kit, and they would go do whatever.
Yeah.
But they took mine, and when they came back, half of it was missing. They, like, forgot it
oh,
there,
shit.
Or it was stolen or something. Yeah, and I was like, what the fuck, you know?
Oh,
so they were my friends. So I was like, ah, you guys will pay me back, you know, soon. And then, like, months went by, and I was like, okay. And then they started, like the band kind of, like, dissipated. I don't even know what happened, but I was, you know, someone suggested to me.
I want my fucking drums back.
Yeah. Someone suggested to me, oh, you should file a small claims suit. They'll get, like, served, and they when they get the serving papers, that'll scare them into just paying you, you know?
Yeah.
And so I remember going to small claims court, and there's a sign, like, on a bulletin board, and it's like, you may be contacted by, like, court TV shows. And I remember thinking, like, yeah, right. You know, and literally, like, the next day, I got a phone call from the People's Court, and they were like, we want you to be on the show in 2 days. It all happened so fast. And they were like, you know, this will only happen if the other party agrees to do it. And so in my head, I thought, these guys know they're in the wrong. They lost my shit. Like, why would they agree to lose on TV?
Go be on TV, brother.
And so they called me back. The People's Court called me back like an hour later. They're like, yeah, so they're in. I was like, whoa.
That's so great.
Yeah. So it was crazy. But yeah, so I won, which is cool. And I got my symbols back. Yeah.
Dude, that's so crazy. I was involved in something not nearly as cool as that. Like, it never went on some television show, but my roommate in college was in a band and like stored his drums at, you know, the guitar's house or something.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, "Hey, I'm going out of the country. Please like let me like keep it here." He's like, "Yeah, fine." Comes back from out of the country. They're like, "I don't know where your drums are." And so there's a whole, like, follow, you know, trying to, like, wild goose chase.
Uh-huh.
And he finally decides, like, fuck, man, I need to sue these people. He's like, "Nadav, could you, like, the person who serves these, the legal papers can't know them. Would you do it?" It was the quickest yes I've ever given to anything. I got a cork board. We printed out pictures. We got red yarn, just like push pinning, like, all very over homeland. The thing. We called it Operation Give Me My Fucking Drums Back. And, like, one of the people that we were suing, like, looks different in different lighting scenarios. So we printed out different, like, pictures of him where he just looks completely different, but it's all the same person. And so we made all these fake, like, iChat accounts. This is getting creepy, but we made all these fake iChat accounts pretending to be groupies. Be like, "Oh, my," like, just trying to figure out where they're going to be, you know, so that we could serve them these papers. We end up finding out that they're playing this, like, emo show at a church in, like, Garbage Grove or something. And,
Where's
like,
Garbage Grove?
It's in Garden Grove.
Oh, Garden Grove.
And so, sorry, that's just what comes up. No offense to anyone.
Garden Grove sounds like a world in, like, Super Mario.
Yeah.
Like, level 7, Garbage Grove.
It smells like Lou Dog inside the van, man. We spent, like, 45 minutes trying to disguise my buddy Isaac, just like a scarf, a beanie, glasses, like everything that we could think of. Second we show up,
this is quite elaborate.
I don't even remember the beginning of the story.
He's gonna serve papers, man.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The second we show up, someone's like, "Oh, hey, Isaac," and I was like, "Fuck." So we're like, "Well, hopefully, like, word doesn't get out." We get there, and I have a video camera in my right hand, and I have the legal papers in my back pocket, and so I see them starting to sound check, and I was like, "Hey, are you guys? This Is Forever?" And like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Oh, and you're the guitarist, right, Chris?" He's like, "Oh, wait. And you're the guitarist, right, Kevin?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm Kevin. Yeah, we'll fix that." to you. legally binding. So he's like, "Yeah, I am." I'm like, "Oh, cool, man. These are for you." And I just, like, take the papers out and I put it in front of my face. And, like, he takes it. He's like, "What is this?" I was like, "Remember Isaac? You stole his drums like a couple years ago? Well, he's suing you. He's right there." And he like starts ripping off like, like the scarf and the beanie and the glasses. He's like, "Fuck you, bro." And literally 5 seconds after I serve him the papers, like the front man of the band, he's like, "All right, and we are Never Say Never. Thanks for coming." And then they start going right into it. So he literally got served papers 5 seconds before he started playing a show.
That's pretty awesome. That's awesome.
And we stood front row and heckled the whole time.
That's a good story.
So, Matt, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. If there's any word of advice that you could give to people, like whether it be getting a page job or getting into USC Film School or making movies in general, like what advice would you give them?
No, yeah. I mean, I guess my advice would be like you don't need any of that stuff. Just if you want to make movies, just go out and just make them. You don't have to have a lot of money. Like I said, I made that movie for $75 and – people have received that better than a lot of the stuff I did at USC.
Yeah.
So yeah, just like get out the key is just getting out there, meeting people and like working with people. And like the more you work on stuff, the better at it you'll be. Yeah.
That's good advice.
I can do that.
Thanks, man.
You would think that would apply to this podcast, but 64 in and it's just as terrible.
It's getting worse.
Yeah.
Stick a fork in us.
It is. We are completely done.
We're overcooked.
Is the cat always here?
Not always.
No, she's actually one of the first.
Yeah, she was actually
she's usually
really
not
good.
Allowed in the room, but she's
really
clearly wants to be on the treadmill.
Yeah.
There was a time where it started biting the back of my face a little bit, but well, you know what? I'm a big boy. I toughed through the pain.
You did.
She did a great job.
And who wants to take Nadav to the hospital?
I will help you.
Wonderful. Thank you, JJ. And with that, you can follow us at Early Call Time on Twitter, on Instagram, like us on Facebook, email us, earlycalltime@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. You can follow JJ.
At JJGeiger711.
You can follow Andrew.
The Real Zuber. You can follow Nadav.
Thank you, Andrew. Follow Nadav at Very Nadav Show. You can follow Matt at...
Not on Twitter.
Not on Twitter.
On Instagram.
McGspot on Instagram.
I love it.
That reminds me of my first Hotmail email address.
And inthebasementmovie.com is the website for
nice.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, guys, look it up. Watch it. Rate it. Donate to it. Buy it.
Just send Matt money.
Do stuff.
Just support filmmaking, you assholes. And with that, listen to the outro.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.